Fan Drive Time, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Ben Ennis and Shai Davidi. And it's 6 o'clock, but it's been dark for like 2 hours because it's January. But 50 days, Shai, between now and the first day of the Toronto Blue Jays Grapefruit League schedule in Bradenton against the Pittsburgh Pirates.
There's going to be sun there. Hopefully we'll see some sunshine in Toronto before then.
Yeah. I would like to see it get cold, though, first, so I can build the rink I've been promising my kids in my backyard. But, yeah, there's plenty of time for that. Let's talk some baseball with Toronto Blue Jays manager John Schneider, who is kind enough to join us right now. How's it going, John?
Hey, what's up, guys? I got sun down here. It's 6 o'clock, and I still got a nice sunset in Florida, so sorry about that. But
send some of it here, John.
So yeah, man, it's been a wild off season for this team. Obviously, a very exciting off season. How have you experienced your first off season as the full time manager of the Toronto Blue Jays?
It's been great. It's been busy. You know, obviously with the moves that we've made, but being out at the winter meetings and kind of going through that for the first time, and being on the phone with players and staff and front office, you know, it's been an exciting time. And I think that, you know, we all collectively can say that we're excited about the additions we've made. You know, sad to see some guys go that have been here for a while, of course, but that's part of it. And we're just really excited to kind of get out there and show what kind of brand of baseball we're going to be playing.
John, where are you right now in terms of preparations? Like, what kind of things are you doing at this point of the year right now to be prepared for when everybody starts arriving in a few weeks' time?
We are getting together down in Florida, the entire field staff, and some other people are going to be down here at our PDC next week for a few days, kind of outlining spring training, new rule changes, things to go over, make sure we're touching on all that in spring training. And kind of just getting our staff together to talk about what we want to accomplish, not only in camp, but as the season goes at the end of March and as it goes along the year. So doing that, I think making sure the players are in the right, you know, the right time in their off-season program. I have the luxury of being about 10 minutes away from our complex. So seeing a lot of those guys every day has been nice. And, you know, I think once the roster really gets finalized, then you start thinking about how we're going to use it and who's going to be where. So probably in the next couple of weeks is when we get that conversation going as well.
Oh, so you haven't started those conversations? I'm sure that the wheels have been spinning in your head because, I mean, yes, you're right. The offseason's not complete. There's already been some pretty major additions to this baseball team and some very notable departures as well. Like, have you started mapping out in your mind what you think your deployment is going to look like in 2023?
Oh, yeah, for sure. And you know, I think that you're just kind of, you know, fine-tuning it. And, you know, if there are, you know, more additions or more subtractions, you kind of go, you know, you pivot and you go that way. But I think we've more than started those conversations about who's going to be where when. I think it's just a lot easier when you have everyone kind of under the same roof where you really get those conversations going.
John, as you look at some of the changes that you'd made, and, you know, think back to the beginning of the offseason and Ross Atkins mentioned run prevention as an area of opportunity, and then you see the moves that were made, and it seemed that even there was a bit of a willingness to perhaps potentially sacrifice a bit on the run production side to ensure there was more defense in Kevin Kiermaier and Dalton Varsho to contribute to the run prevention. What led to some of the thinking there that this was the area that you guys needed to attack? Was there a sense that, you know, maybe there was a bit of looseness there that you could tie up from a defensive standpoint, and that was going to be the way to perhaps make the biggest impact on the club?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's ways to always impact the club. And when you look at the way we've kind of been constructed the last couple of years, we had no problem scoring runs. I think some of it kind of came in spurts. And, you know, you look up at the end of the year and the numbers are where they are as a group offensively, OPS, runs, all that kind of stuff. So I think, you know, kind of pivoting and saying, okay, what are other areas we can continue to get better at? And defense, and I think base running jumps to the top of my mind when you're looking at the way we play. So if it means kind of sacrificing some production, you know, then okay, I get where people see that. But man, I think if being around the game as long as I have and as long as I think we have collectively as a staff, when you're talking about pitching and defense and how much that can change the momentum of a game, momentum of a series, or even a couple weeks in the season, I think that always jumps to everyone's forefront. So while we've improved our defense, we definitely want to, you know, not lose sight of what we're going to do on the bases to kind of continue to produce runs in a different aspect, in a different way, and continue to let our lineup do what they're really, really good at, which is doing damage, getting on base, and scoring.
How do you feel the incoming rules on the shift? How did that factor into maybe a bit of an emphasis or a change in what you may need from an outfield defensive standpoint?
Yeah, I mean, I think with the whole rule change, you know, everyone kind of forgets about the outfield because you talk about the infield shift going away. But, you know, with the way guys are hitting the ball these days, and the game will kind of probably ebb and flow back to, you know, maybe a different style of hitting. But so many balls are hit in the air, and we're just trying to really convert those into outs as much as we can. So we think, you know, having a really strong outfield defense is going to be an absolute must with everything that the game is going to be adjusting to. And at the same time, you look at our infield and you look at the corners of the Gold Glover and Vladdy and a Platinum Glover and Chappie and then Bo at short and a combination of with Biggio or Espy, who we think are really, really, really good defenders, all four of those guys, I think it puts us in a really good spot. So whenever you have, you know, an elite guy on either side of second base, I think that, you know, you're in a good position to start from an infield standpoint with the new shift rules. So we like where we landed so far from a defensive standpoint.
John, you mentioned earlier that this was, well, we all know it was a great offense, and all the counting stats would indicate that it was a great offense. I think second most runs scored in the American League. But you mentioned that it at times scored in spurts, which is, I think there were a lot of fans who felt that, right? That there would be, you know, maybe a week where scoring really, really took off, and then, you know, a couple of games in a row where it was tough to find runs. Is that just the nature of the sport, the yep. nature of this lineup in general? Is there something that you can do or that induces more consistency in an offense?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of the sport. You know, baseball's hard, and hitting is hard, and pitching has gotten so good to where it is hard to do day in and day out. But I think that, you know, there were times, and I think, you know, we labeled ourselves, and it was easy to talk about us being very streaky. And if we were hot, we were hot. And if we weren't, we weren't. And if we weren't hitting in one phase, we were hitting in the other phase. If we were pitching, we weren't hitting. And if we were hitting, we weren't pitching or playing D, whatever it may be. So I think trying to just be consistent day in and day out, you know, and not score one or two runs, you know, for a couple of games and then score 11, 10, and 9 in the next series is kind of just figuring out ways to, you know, scratch and claw when you need to. You know, because you have to give respect to the, you know, the people you're playing, especially in our division. So you got to figure out a way to kind of, you know, avoid those peaks and valleys to where it's when it's going good, it's good. And when you're not doing it, you're really, really scrapping and clawing.
John, with two new left-handed hitters in Varsho and Kiermaier, who in theory are going to be playing a bit more regularly than some of the left-handers that you had last year, how do you envision placing them in the lineup to maybe break up some of the righties and perhaps make planning a little bit more difficult on the opposing managers, particularly when matching up late in the game?
Yeah, that's definitely something we've already been talking about. And you look at each one of those guys and their skill set, you know, with, you know, some speed, obviously, really good base runners. They can both bunt for hits. They can both hit the ball to the ballpark. So I think that's a really good combination to have for one. And two, you can't really forget or ignore how talented our right-handed hitters are as well. So, you know, having you know, faith in those guys when they're going to see a lot of right-handed pitching, you know, based on the rest of our lineup. So that's a good thing for them. And we're always going to trust, you know, Bo Vlad, Chappie George, Kirk, Jano to kind of do their thing against righties as well. So it's a luxury to have those guys. It puts guys in advantageous matchups more often than not. And it does make it a little bit harder for opposing managers to game plan and just say, okay, we're going to bring in three righties today after our starter and force their hand a little bit.
Varsho is a guy that I'm sure a lot of Blue Jays fans were unfamiliar with playing out in the western part of North America and for a team that hasn't exactly been super relevant. But yeah, his baseball reference numbers and, well, I mean, his advanced defensive numbers certainly jump off the page, and his versatility. John, I mean, there's a guy that played at the catcher position more than a few times a season ago. Have you thought about where you're going to use him, at least defensively, this upcoming season?
Yeah, I think primarily it's going to be in the corner outfield spots and especially left field. But knowing that he can play center and knowing that he can catch is just an unbelievable skill set and such a luxury to have as a manager when you're trying to game plan with some in-game moves. So we're not going to ask him to suit up and start a bunch of games behind the plate. We feel comfortable with the guys we have there in Jano and Kirky. But knowing that if something comes up late in the game and we got to ask Varsh to catch an inning and he's comfortable doing it, it's just a real, real luxury to have. So hopefully get some reps in spring training and get to know the pitchers a little bit and get familiar with what they like to do and what we like to do and kind of have that weapon in our back pocket.
John, how do you manage that when a guy can catch? Like, do you have to get him a certain amount of games just so that, you know, throughout the course of regular season, just so that he's staying in that shape and in that mindset? Or, you know, can you just keep him in the outfield and then just use him periodically when need arises?
Yeah, I think in a perfect world, that's the way you deploy him, is when need arises based on game state. But, you know, with that comes, you know, just work, kind of maintenance work in between, whether it's catching a bullpen here or there or doing some defensive work to kind of stay a little bit sharp without taking away from what he's going to be doing primarily in the outfield. So, we're not going to ask him to, you know, totally overhaul anything that he's used to. And it'll probably be less than what he's ever done. You know, I think whatever it was, 30 games or so, you know, it's not going to be deliberately that much. And it also obviously offers a little bit of protection when you're looking at health and things like that. But just trying to stay sharp and, you know, when need arises, have him ready.
Talking to Blue Jays manager John Schneider. So there was also, as I mentioned, a couple of notable departures from last year's team, a couple of guys who were very popular amongst the fan base and certainly seemed very popular in the clubhouse as well, and Teoscar Hernandez and Lourdes Gurriel Jr. How do you make sure that there's not some loss of chemistry there? Because like I said, I mean, as an outsider, it did seem like those were a couple of very popular guys in that clubhouse.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, you know, baseball does a good job of kind of policing that itself. You know, just the game and the natural environment that you're in every day and the routine that you get into, guys really get to know one another. But, you know, those guys have been there for a while. Obviously big personalities and guys that did really, really well for, you know, a team that was kind of transitioning from rebuilding a little bit to being a real contender. So, you know, we, you know, think the world of them and, you know, we wish Teo good luck in Seattle and Lourdes and Gabby in Arizona, but are thrilled with the return that we got in Swanee and Varsho. So it's, you know, it's a little bit of give, a little bit of take. And I think that the, you know, guys are at the point, even our young guys, our young core, they're at the point in their careers now where they've been around long enough, they understand the part of the game where this stuff does happen. And you look at the guys that we're bringing in, the character, the work ethic, the teammates that they are, you really can't just say how excited we are, how well they're going to fit into the clubhouse. It's already a tight-knit group.
Blue Jays fans, John, I think are pretty familiar with what Kevin Kiermaier brings to the table. They've obviously seen him enough over the years and have a sense of who he is as a player. But, you know, he's a pretty hard-nosed, competitive guy. Varsho, similarly, is a hard-nosed, competitive guy, and someone Blue Jays fans probably haven't seen play as much. Just how do you think those two guys may help alter some of the personality of your team, or perhaps, you know, what kind of impact their fingerprints on the club might look like from a personality standpoint?
Yeah, I mean, they go hard, they go fast. They're bringing it every day, and they got kind of one speed, which I think is great, and certain guys play that way. You know, you've seen George do it for a couple of years, and, you know, Chappie's a little bit, of, you know, built the same way, Witt's kind of the same way. You know, most of the guys are, but I think kind of having that presence day in, day out is nothing but good for the rest of our team, you know. So it's, you know, it's not that we were trying to totally flip the script on personnel or personality, but I think when you have guys that are very routine-oriented and very, very focused on winning that night, it is a really, really good atmosphere to start when you're trying to have a great season.
John, as far as workflow is concerned, like how much of your input is involved in some of these off-season decisions?
Yeah, it's a collective effort for sure. You know, I think the front office stuff does a lot of the heavy lifting, obviously, but there's a lot of back and forth. There's a lot of conversating as to preferences, you know, how I would, you know, round out a roster or round out a group of players, however it may be, what I feel comfortable with and You know, where I feel the need is based on how we're going to deploy people. You know, what's more important? Is it this or is it that? So it's a constant back and forth, I think, with myself, the entire coaching staff, and with the front office. So, again, they're doing the heavy lifting, and I think it's great that I'm involved in the input and kind of the conversations that go into how we're going to run it.
John, it's a bit strange to say this about a guy who's had Chris Bassett's career so far, but it almost feels like his signing has flown under the radar a little bit this offseason compared to some of the other moves. Obviously losing Ross Stripling after the season that he had and the important contributions that he made is tough, but you know, having or bringing in Chris Bassett to replace him is a pretty good way to cover that. Just what do you envision for him in the rotation? Like, what does he bring to your group?
Yeah. Oh, by the way, we got another really good starting pitcher. Yeah. I mean, it's a stabilizing force. It's a guy with a tremendous track record, especially recently, in how he's gone about his business and how he deploys his pitches. Thrilled to have him. Again, kind of fits that same mold of coming right after you, albeit in a different kind of way. A little bit similar to Strip, where he's not going to overpower you with certain things, but is really going to be a bulldog every time he's on the mound, just like the rest of our starters. So, you know, stability, you know what you're going to get from him every night. He's going to give you a chance to win every single night. Rave reviews about him as a person and a teammate from Chappie and a lot of other guys that know him well, and speaking to him this offseason, he is absolutely thrilled to be part of it and ready to go, which is great. But yeah, you can't say enough about having just a reliable veteran starting pitcher that you know what you're going to get from every night.
And with that, staying on the rotation, it seems at this point that the one remaining question is, you know, who ends up in the fifth spot? And certainly there's time for potentially other candidates to come in, but right now, does it look to you like, you know, competition to some degree between Mitch White and Yusei Kikuchi? And what do you know of Yusei's work this offseason that may perhaps position him for a bit more consistency on the mound next year?
Yeah, I think, you know, you look at those two guys and, you know, in a very kind of roller coaster season for Yusei in his first year with us, still, I mean, I like to look at the positives. There's still a lot of positives to take from his year, although he wanted to have it end a different way it did. But, yeah, in a perfect world, you're envisioning one of those guys having that fifth spot and the other one being in the bullpen. However that shakes out to affect the rest of the pitching staff is kind of to be determined. But love where they're both at in terms of their offseason. I think Mitch is going to try to get down here later this month, down to the PDC, and really kind of finish off his offseason down here with our staff. And Yusei was actually on a call with Pete. He's actually on a call with Pete and Bush right now, and David Howell at 6 o'clock to kind of shore up the rest of his offseason. But everything we've heard from him has been very, very positive in terms of where he's at physically, and looking for a bounce back season from him. So, you know, as of now, you know, if one of those guys steps up and the other one is in a little bit of a different role, let's kind of see where that's where we see this kind of ending up as the season approaches.
John, appreciate you taking the time for us. I'll go back to like just staring out the window, wishing it was February 25th and I could watch Blue Jays baseball spring training wise in Bradenton against the Pirates. Thanks for doing this.
Yeah, you bet, guys. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
See you, John.
John.
There's John Schneider, Blue Jays manager. All right. Lots to get to from that. I was interested to hear him bring up, without prompting, the consistency thing, like the way he felt that offense scored. They were streaky, right? I think he called them streaky in all aspects of baseball, whether it was defense, and he brought up base running a couple of times too, that he's just looking for a little more consistency out of the group. I think it stood out that it was the offensive consistency, but he's talking about consistency up and down.
Yeah, and look, if you're going to break down not just last year, 2021 as well, right? It really, in both years, is sort of a tale of two seasons, right? Mm-hmm. It's because they've got this stretch where everything comes together and they play unbelievable. And it happened in the back half of both seasons. And then they've got this stretch where they just look like less than the sum of their parts.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, I thought the emphasis on run prevention from a defensive perspective and emphasis on base running, was really telling of where the Blue Jays felt they were losing games, that they were losing games in the margins, and that little details like, you know, keeping a guy from going first to third on a single to the outfield, you know, taking the extra base when you can, being able to create some things when the other opposition pitcher is, you know, really strong on a given day. To me, the way that they're speaking seems to point an emphasis on those things, and those little elements of the game are where it sounds like the Blue Jays believe they're going to make the biggest difference.
Yeah, I like tight defensive baseball teams. That's all well and good. Like, that's a fun brand of baseball to watch. This team was good, won 92 games a season ago, on the strength of offense, though, right? Like, on the strength of scoring a bunch of runs. And not that, you know, a bunch of guys that produced those runs are gone, but one significant guy that produced those runs in Teoscar Hernandez, a former Silver Slugger, is gone. And Dalton Varsho hit 27 home. I'm going to let you speak. Just hold on.
No, I'm just, I just like, it's, they didn't, when they were playing their best, they were tight defensively, mm-hmm. and they pitched well, yeah. right? Like, There were times where they scored a lot of runs and they didn't win or weren't winning as consistently as they were when they were good on those in those other aspects of the game.
Okay, what would you say the hallmark of the 2022 Blue Jays was? It was there were two great starters at the top of that rotation, and mm-hmm. Alek Manoah, Kevin Gausman was great. One great closer, and you know a pretty average bullpen outside of the closer, and they scored a bunch of runs, and it wasn't from one guy like it was in 2021 where Vladimir Guerrero Jr. just stood out.
Marcus Semien.
And Marcus Semien, yeah, setting the record for most home runs hit by a second baseman. It's a bunch of guys with around four wars. But yeah, they it was a pretty good offense, by which I mean the second best in the American League.
100%. And I'm not saying that wasn't their primary strength, because mm-hmm. that's not what I'm arguing. But I think the point that I'm trying to make, and I think that this is what I heard in John Schneider's answer, is that when this team was at its best, it was doing the other things as well, mm-hmm. which is obvious and sort yeah. of makes sense.
But do as many things well as you possibly can.
But that one of the reasons I think the Blue Jays feel there was some of that inconsistency, and you know I believe some of the players felt this way too, is that they were inconsistent in some of the other elements of mm-hmm. the game, mm-hmm. especially from a defensive standpoint. Little details, small things that, you know, things that save a pitcher an out, things that save 90 feet that, you know, keeping a runner from advancing to keep a double play in order. Little things like that get lost, and sometimes an inning opens up that if you prevent that from happening, it changes the dynamic of the game. And the Blue Jays could absolutely shock and awe over the past couple of years at the plate, but that's not always going to be there, because some of the other pitchers in the American League and National League for that matter are really, really good. And can you win different styles of game? Mm-hmm. Can you win no matter what the game presents? Find ways to win no matter what the game presents to you. And I feel like one of the things the Blue Jays were trying to do this offseason was just shift their roster a little bit to be able to win more types of games.
Yeah, I get that. And I like that. I like that a whole bunch. Even if it means going from second in runs scored to, like, I don't know, seventh. What you don't want to go is from like second to like 15th. And then, you know, because you're running Kevin Kiermaier out there every day, who's got a 600 OPS, which is very much in the realm of possibility. I think Dalton Varsho is an above average offensive player, which makes his acquisition real, real good.
Yes.
Like, he's an elite, elite defender, but a guy who is already at this stage in his major league career, a slightly above average offensive player, and maybe in a better hitter environment and surrounded by better hitters, if you believe in lineup construction, can reach even greater heights. But this is a team that, I mean, if Kevin Kiermaier isn't lying, was told that he's going to be the everyday center fielder, which if he's playing great center field defense,
probably 120, 130 games.
Sure. Right? Yes. Which is
if healthy.
Yeah. That's his like career high in games. So when he says 100 or when he says every day, yeah, it doesn't mean 162 games, but generally every day in center field hitting ninth, you've substituted out, well, George Springer's still in the outfield. He's playing right field. But essentially what you've done is you've taken out Teoscar Hernandez from the outfield mix, who's a 30-plus homer bat, and you put in a guy who's not that, who's a below-average offensive player, but a super, super high-level defender at one of the most premium positions. So you've sacrificed a ton of offense, which Teoscar Hernandez will bring you, for a ton of defense. That's what they've done with one outfield position.
Sure, but...
And I just think Varsho is just an overall upgrade over Lourdes.
100%. But let's do this. Assuming that Kevin Kiermaier is healthy and able to play defense at his career norm levels,
which is yet to be determined,
not a guarantee. Absolutely. And I'm just saying, but like assuming that, the defensive contribution that he's going to give you and the defensive value that he's going to provide in terms of saving runs,
yeah,
especially in the non-shift world.
Oh, it's possible.
Is going to make up for that. And look, I think if he's doing that with a 700 OPS, no, but there is no concern here.
No.
If it's 600 OPS,
yeah,
then it's a different conversation. So
he has to do something.
Yeah, he can't be a zero. He can't be a non-factor offensively.
Because they had Bradley Zimmer.
Right. We saw that movie and Jackie Bradley Jr.
Yeah.
Like, you don't want that movie to rerun.
Yeah.
But what you want, I mean, if he gets back to being somebody who can be a bit of a disruptor at the bottom of the lineup, just pesky, using his legs to create some havoc, getting on base occasionally, and then letting the big boys at the top of the lineup move him around, that's going to play.
Yep. We'll see. Definitely an interesting offseason. All right. When we come back, Bills wrapping up the regular season this weekend. It'll be an emotional scene in Orchard Park. We'll talk to Sal Capaccio, Bills reporter for WGR. He was on the field in Cincinnati on Monday as well. He's going to join us next. The Fan Drive Time continues. Ben Ennis, Shai Davidi, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Fan Drive Time, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Ben Ennis and Shai Davidi, and all eyes will be on Orchard Park on Sunday as the Buffalo Bills wrap up their regular season, because they will not play a game number 17. They wrap up with 16 regular season games as they host the New England Patriots. After, I would say, a very tumultuous week, as DeMar Hamlin doing apparently incredibly, incredibly well, including having a Zoom conversation with his teammates today. Let's talk to Sal Capaccio, Bills reporter for WGR. Sal, thanks so much for doing this. This has been, I imagine, one of the most insane weeks you've ever had to go through covering this team.
Yeah, for sure, guys. Thank you for having me on. I mean, insane.
All right, we're going to try and reconnect with Sal, because obviously his phone is not doing so hot. But the NFL going through with a number of great initiatives for this weekend as well. Like, there's going to be a moment of silence before every game. There's going to be, I think, the number three in every 30-yard line is going to be outlined for DeMar Hamlin. It's going to be great everywhere. And it is so great that we have such positive news surrounding him going into the weekend. I can't imagine that scene at Orchard Park on Sunday.
Sure. And look, I think the fact that he's doing well is going to allow everybody to enjoy football a little bit more than you would have if everybody was still on tenterhooks waiting if he was going to be okay.
Yeah. And thank God he is. All right. Sal Capaccio is back, Bills reporter for WGR. Yeah. You were talking about what a week it's been.
Yeah. Hopefully you have me a little bit better, guys. Sorry about that. It's certainly been a very emotional week. They've had some insane weeks, including games getting moved to other cities for snow and not being able to get back from cities because of snow. But the emotion of this week has just been a bit overwhelming at times, to be quite honest.
Yeah, what do you think, I mean, Sunday's going to feel like, especially considering the positive news on DeMar Hamlin, it is going to be more of a celebration, I imagine. It's a pretty quick turnaround for a very emotional set of teammates, I imagine. How ready for this football game, frankly, are the Buffalo Bills?
Well, I guess that remains to be seen. You're wondering like I am. We all are wondering, because, you know, the emotion is going to carry them in some way, but you also wonder if it's going to be a little overwhelming. You have to stay in the moment and focus on football. And they've had a bit of a short week against a team, you know, coached by Bill Belichick, that's going to be fighting for your season. You know, it's going to be interesting to see how all this plays out, to be quite honest. But, you know, when we talked to Sean McDermott and Josh Allen last night, we said, and it was asked to them, you know, do you think you'll be ready to play this game? And Josh emphatically quickly said, I do. And a lot of that was because of the news on DeMar and how positive and uplifting that it's been the last couple of days.
Yeah, Sal, it seems that news is almost I don't know if this is the right way to put it, but almost like permission for everybody to just say, yeah, we can think about football without, you know, being on tenterhooks waiting for word about how Hamlin's going to be doing. Just what have you heard from and seen from around the team to the way maybe they're trying to help players shift from this hyper-vigilant mode where you're concerned about your teammate to the point where, you know, they have to, you know, focus on a game, which, you know, even as much as a couple of days ago seemed completely irrelevant.
Well, listen, I'll be honest with you guys. We have not been able to watch practice this week. It's been closed. And we haven't even been able to really talk to any players until yesterday when we were able to talk to Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean at night and when they were made available at 4:30 p.m. Otherwise, you know, it's been – I can't tell you. I can't tell you how the players are feeling other than what we saw from them, what we heard from them. And at the same time, you know, it's just kind of a guessing game and what they've been telling us. And from today, when DeMar was able to FaceTime with them, you know, how amazing that must have been. We talked to Sean McDermott ahead of my radio program, and he just said, like, you know, obviously it was incredible in the room. But we haven't been around the team, and we totally respect that, you know, that they just kind of had privacy all week, if you will. Did not have open practices. The campus was basically closed. We haven't been able to go in the locker room or talk with any players.
Hmm. We also got news today that, yeah, that game will not be replayed, and the Bills and Bengals will sit on 16 regular season games, and that we might have a neutral site AFC championship game if one of those teams is involved with, I guess, the Chiefs, if the teams in the AFC championship game have played an uneven number of games. There's no, like, ultimately correct answer to any of this, Sal, but with the result that we got from the NFL, what did you make of the decision that was made?
I agree. There's no ultimate perfect solution. I do think this might be as close to as fair and equitable as possible because there is no completely fair and equitable solution. It's just an unfortunate situation all around, obviously, and for the reason that we're in this situation. But, you know, I think at least the league has tried to do its best to not necessarily punish the Bills, if you will, for something that, you know, they had to go through here. But at the same time, understand that, you know, you can't just be awarding wins or losses to anyone. So it's a tough situation for the league. I think Cincinnati really is the one that might have gotten hurt more than anything in this league, I mean, in this situation, because they're talking about having to flip a coin for a playoff game that they would be the 3 seed for. They'd have to go on the road for if they lose that coin flip.
Seems
pretty ridiculous. But, you know, it's just, I don't know, really know. I don't think there was a perfect solution here at all.
Yeah, no, there wasn't. Because if there was, we'd probably be living through it right now.
Right.
And we're not.
Right.
Before we let you go, Sal, and I understand that, yeah, your communication with the team and through the head coach has been sort of limited, but you mentioned you did have Sean McDermott on your radio program. And from everything we've heard about the events on Monday, that he was pretty key in the decision to halt that game and maybe override a decision that might have been made by the NFL. And Josh Allen was almost breaking down in tears talking about his head coach. He's been so successful just on the field as the head coach. It almost feels like he's the head coach for life with the type of praise that he's gotten this week.
Yeah, Josh said yesterday that McDermott was the perfect man to lead them, you know, through all of this. And GM Brandon Bean said today that he believes that Sean McDermott deserves NFL Coach of the Year, the way he's led his team through all of this. I mean, you start with, you know, this situation. Obviously, you go back to the game that was moved to Detroit. You go back to not being able to get home from the blizzard in Chicago. If you want to, you can go all the way back to May when we had the racist mass shooting here at the top supermarket and how the Bills have been at the kind of the forefront of the healing process led by Sean McDermott here in our community. All of that. I don't know if it was overriding the NFL. I don't think we've had that clarity on that. But it certainly was, I think, the NFL taking its cues from Sean McDermott and Zach Taylor in that situation. I give Zach Taylor a lot of credit, by the way, too, for kind of, you know, being just kind of letting McDermott, you know, guide them and say, look, I have to be with DeMar. I can't coach this game. And Zach Taylor, you know, totally understood that. And the Bengals and their organization, their city, everybody working there were really great throughout this entire process. But to your point about McDermott, I just think he's been an exceptional leader throughout all of this.
Yeah, no, he's done incredibly well under very trying circumstances. Thank goodness the news is super positive surrounding DeMar Hamlin. Sal, great job this week, and thanks so much for doing this.
Yeah, anytime, guys. Thank you.
Sal Capaccio, Bills reporter for GR. And it is, yeah, it's one of those situations. And it, you know what, it also aligns with Sean McDermott being just like a really good football coach and leading this team to playoff appearances. And, you know, maybe like the last 13 seconds of their game against the Chiefs in the postseason back. But other than that, it's been nothing but positive surrounding Sean McDermott. But it feels like, man, to ingratiate yourself to a fan base, not that already wasn't done, and to, your players, the way he's handled this week has been almost pitch perfect.
You know what actually was sticking out to me as we were listening to Sal talk and describe everything? And look, I know, like, from a fact-based, logical, analytical standpoint, kind of what the chain of events are, but if you just kind of listening to him, just think about how insane it is that on Monday, Damar Hamlin nearly lost his life on a football field.
Yep.
And here we are on Friday, and he's communicating with his teammates, and we're getting ready for a football game, and we've adjusted the schedule. And it's incredible how much has happened from in such an intense way in such a short amount of time, and where we started to where we've gotten in the 4 days, that I can't imagine what it's going to be like for those players. And like, you think about the journey of a season and how intense that is and all the different things you go through. And then you throw this in at the most high stakes period. And now you're saying to these guys who nearly lost one of their teammates and just, yeah, let's get back to it. It's all of this. This is a masterclass in coaching from McDermott, as you were just saying, but it's also a masterclass in being a human being.
Yeah.
And that is not something we always see in this industry. And it's not something we always see in sports in this way. And you've had a lot of people doing the right things in a lot of different ways. And, you know, I think that just hearing Sal, who's been closer to it than us, obviously, talk about it and describe it, it really struck me.
Yeah, well, and you mentioned the emotions of the week, which were so down, and then gradually, I mean, culminating with today, like a FaceTime Zoom call with Damar Hamlin.
The breathing tubes out and all that, you know, like that's a major development too, right? That he's breathing on his own. That's extremely extremely good news.
Yeah, well, and then it'll be capped on Sunday for whatever pregame festivities they have involved, and maybe like, I don't know, is Damar Hamlin going to record something that they show on the video screen? Like, I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility. The trainer that was the first on scene performing CPR, there's going to be a moment for him. Like, yeah, it's going to be a wild, wild scene on the field at Orchard Park this weekend. And I would say, lastly, that I think most people within our listening audience are predisposed to be Bills fans because of proximity. But, like, NFL neutrals, if you have no dog in the race going towards the Super Bowl, the Bills are everybody's de facto team now, are they not?
Well, I mean, you know, even having Sal outline what Buffalo's been through.
Yeah.
Right?
There was stuff like, there that I'd forgotten about.
No, I mean, you know, like I think we're all still haunted to some degree by that, you know, the mass murder.
Yeah.
And that incident and how terrible that is. And then, obviously, to get dumped on in a storm in that way. And, you know, just that's a community that's been through a lot, right? And then, you know, sports is something that ideally is just bringing happy to people, right? Like, life in general is hard. We've been through a tremendously difficult period of life through the pandemic and, you know, inflation and all the different challenges that we faced in the last few years collectively. You know, sports needs to bring people a little bit of happy. And that got stripped away in a horrific way on Monday night. And now it's got a chance to give it back.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to carry a little bit more meaning in that community in a way that it otherwise wouldn't have. And, you know, you'd like to see some good come of this. I don't want to be trite about this because obviously there is a person's life at stake, and obviously, there are some more significant things in the world that are happening right now, but you would want communities who have been through difficult times to have joyful things happen to them. And, you know, I think right now it's pretty easy to want Buffalo to have some good things happen to that city.
Yeah. Yep. And like I said, a lot of Bills fans in this listening audience felt that way anyways. But yeah, no, I think if you're like me and you're an NFL agnostic, like the Bills are I guess, going to be my team. There's a couple other baseball things I wanted to get to before we wrap up today. One is that 2015 Toronto Blue Jays opening day starter Drew Hutchison, he's back in a different form. He was signed to a minor league deal today with an invite to spring training. It's been a circuitous route for a guy that was expected to be a part of the rotation for years and years and years, and injuries and performance. Yeah, it didn't end up working out for Drew in Toronto, obviously involved in a trade, sent him to the Pirates, and then he was with the Tigers last year, made a start against the Jays last year.
5 innings, 1-run ball.
Yeah.
July 30th.
So why the hell not, right? Like, this is, I mean, if this is the type of addition, actually, man, apologies to Thomas Hatch, but he is the guy that you think of as the guy that you want to keep as far away from the major leagues as possible. So you need to get that type of quad A guy that you can maybe stash at Buffalo. And I don't know if Drew has like some sort of stipulation, as sometimes they do, that there's an opt out if you don't make the major league team, that you can say thanks but no thanks and try and catch on somewhere else. But if he is signed up for this role that would probably land him in the major leagues at some point, if he on this minor league deal does not break camp with the Blue Jays and is in that AAA Buffalo rotation and performs well, that's like, yeah, Chris Bassett's real, real good, and that's an addition you had to make, but this is also the type of addition you need to make.
Yeah, and this is an area where, you know, talking to some people with the Blue Jays last season, they felt that they could have been a little bit more aggressive at, and to some degree, they felt that maybe because of the lockout and the way everything happened all at once, and everyone was so focused on major league signings as spring training camps were open once the lockout ended, that they didn't maybe address that layer of veteran depth at AAA that in a way that they otherwise might have, and that would have left them in a better situation. And, you know, I think to a degree, they were counting on Thomas Hatch and Anthony Kay and Bowden Francis mm-hmm. and some of the other arms that ended up getting, you know, quick looks to provide that depth and you know, be there if they need, you know, a few starts. But the reason you sign guys like Thomas Hatch and Casey Lawrence and having them on hand is so that you're not running 3 bullpen games in 14 days or whatever it was, the way the Blue Jays did in September mm-hmm. because they were out of options. So, you know, this is another small detail that the Blue Jays are attacking right now that maybe slipped through the cracks a little bit last year and could potentially make a difference, even if it's just, you know, saving a few innings here and there in a couple of starts. Like, you need this type of guy around.
Yeah, plus you get to say 2015 opening day starter Drew Hutchison, which people forget. Like, the season that rejuvenated a fan base started with, and no offense to returned Blue Jay Drew Hutchison, but yeah, that the season started with a great start, by the way, at Yankee Stadium. Drew Hutchison, opening day starter. Wait. And the Blue Jays went on this insane run, made the playoffs, and made the American League Championship Series.
What's interesting is you may remember some of the narrative around Drew Hutchison that he was great at home and terrible on the road and
right.
had the splits to show it. I think the one year there was about a 6-run difference between his home and road ERA. And after he had that good start against the Jays in July, ended up talking to him after the game. And he kind of had a little bit of smiles like, oh, still pitching well at the Dome here in Toronto.
Yeah. And again, like if he ends up performing well in spring training, hangs on through the opening of camp, and he stays in AAA and performs well there, I imagine he'd be one of the first call-ups because the Blue Jays, I think, are probably going to need more than 5 starters as every team does
there
in Major League Baseball.
There is zero downside to a minor league deal.
100%. And then secondarily, SNY's Andy Martino reporting the Mets are considering walking away from Carlos Correa because they've gotten so frustrated in negotiations after another, not failed medical, but another snag in his physical after walking away from the Giants after a similar issue presented itself. And John Heyman reporting that at least one other team has made contact with him, and that team is reported to be the Minnesota Twins, of course, where he played baseball a season ago. This story is super weird, super interesting. I mean, I haven't kicked it around with you, have I? Hey, maybe the Blue Jays swoop in here at the last second and grab Carlos Correa on a one-year, $40 million deal to play second base?
We have not discussed that. I'd say the odds of that happening are quite low.
Okay. I think that's fair.
But I will say it is very interesting in terms of the battle of contrasting leaks right now between the Mets and the Boris camp, each one of them trying to jockey for position here. I'm really intrigued at the possibility that the Mets might walk away from this after their owner made public comments about a signing. It would buck convention in so many different ways. I'm sure it would trigger all kinds of recourse with the Players Association and Boris, the Boris camp as well. I still think there's need on both ends, both the Mets and the Correa camp's ends, to get a deal done and find a pathway through this. But each side is clearly trying to put pressure on the other right now, which suggests that they've hit some sort of roadblock or wall in their discussions, and someone needs to budge, and that's why this stuff comes out.
You know, and maybe this is just me wishful thinking because I think it's so hilarious. But what I think of when I hear this type of back and forth, and when I put my thinking cap on, is that Steve Cohen is screwed up big time by talking publicly about this signing. And that Scott Boras is not letting him off the hook at all. Like that Steve Cohen's like, oh, wait, there was something wrong with them. Yeah, like that's the whole reason he landed in your lap. But that he's trying to put in the contract provisos that would, of course, protect his team against an injury to the ankle that showed up on the scan or whatever. And that Scott Boras, if on a neutral playing field, that would have been totally fair game. The fact that he's come out publicly talking about how this thing is done and that Scott Boras believes he has recourse to say, no, I want the whole thing. I want what you talked about to the world that you were going to give my player, that it feels, that's what it feels like, at least from the outside, that Scott Boras wants the whole thing. He doesn't want any stipulation in that contract that allows the Mets to walk away or for Carlos Correa not to get his, whatever, $350 million.
Right. Well, I mean, look, the San Francisco Giants walked away from it, but they never made public comments.
That's it.
Right? That's how you behave as a team in this situation, because you don't want to taint the player. But Steve Cohen bragged about it and said this was the piece that we needed to put us over the top. And now you're out? Like, you can't do that to a player in that way. And so There are going to be all kinds of precedents stemming from this. And look, it's really interesting, the nature of these things and the way things leak, you know, the way information is transferred. Like, as soon as deals happen, it gets out. The agent or the team wants their market to know, and they put it out there. They let it be known. And 99.9% of the time, there is not an issue. But sometimes there is, mm-hmm. in rare cases. And that it is with a contract this prominent and with public comments from an owner tainting, and then a withdrawal tainting a player's free agency, the stakes are too high here for both the Players Association and the Boris camp to not get whole in some way. So this one is tricky for a number of reasons, and I think there will be repercussions from this in a significant fashion.
Yeah, learning moment for Steve Cohen. Time now for Last Call, brought to you by Bet Rivers. It's a whole new game. Raptors hosting the New York Knicks tonight down at Scotiabank Arena, and the Raptors facing an RJ Barrett-less New York Knicks team. Raptors 4-point favorites at home. OG Anunoby, point total 15.5. Pascal Siakam, of course, leading the Raptors. His point total is 24.5. Fred VanVleet, 18.5. And that was Last Call, brought to you by Bet Rivers. It's a whole new game. Shy? I'm going away next week. You're going to be on this show next week with Blake Murphy, though, right?
I'm doing your job for you next week. I think that's what's happening.
Thanks for that. This was a lot of fun, though, man. Thanks for doing this.
Yeah, it was great fun. And knock back a couple pina coladas for me, all right?
All right, I will. All right, Blake Murphy, Chai Davidi next week. This has been The Fan Drive Time, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.